Hello, everybody, and welcome to the DeathStoreProf.com Movies and Television Podcast. As always, these podcasts are brought to you by Functional Sponsors, but today we are brought to you by Sears Canada. Sears Canada is committed to improving the lives of their customers by providing quality services, products, and solutions that earn their trust and build lifetime relationships. They have everything you need in terms of household appliances and other such needs like that at really great prices. So, head over to Sears Canada, click the link at the bottom of the page or any of the banners on the site for Sears Canada, and go get some great home stuff at some great prices. Sears Canada. It's Sears in Canada. While I don't have anything like towels or bed sheets or stuff, we do have shirts and other such things. So please, head over to DeathStoreProfs.com/store and check some of that stuff out. As always, we are always accepting new design ideas and art and such. So if you have some, please don't hesitate to send them to bovywan@deathstoreprods.com or post them in the t-shirt design thread on the forums. If you submit some art and we like it and use it, we'll be able to pay you based on how well the product we put it on sell. If you submit a design idea, we'd love to hear from you, but unfortunately we won't be able to pay you if we use it. We'll be able to credit you, but we can't pay you. Sorry. If you have art, though, you can make money. So again, that is bovywan@deathstoreprods.com or post them in the t-shirt design thread on the forums. We're also doing Extra Life again this year. So for those who don't know what Extra Life is, it is a 24-hour gaming marathon, which happens every year. This year will be happening on November 2nd from 8 a.m. to 8 a.m. or on a different day and time depending on people's availability. And basically, we're just going to be gaming for 24 hours to help raise money to help support in Children's Miracle Network hospitals. For us, we are supporting the Sick Kids Foundation in Toronto. If you would like to contribute, please head on over to deathstoreprods.com/extra-life. There's a big banner at the bottom of the page you can click on. And donate or join the team and help us fundraise. All donations go directly to support those hospitals. All donations are tax deductible if you're into that sort of thing. So again, please, if you can, head over to deathstoreprods.com/extra-life. That's, again, link at the bottom of the page. And donate or join the team and help us fundraise. Any amount and any effort put in helps, and it could save some kids' lives. So please, do what you can. I'm your host, The Dead Man. Joining me today, as always, we have Bovywan.
Hello.
And nobody else. Good to hear from you, nobody else.
That's the thing Dead Man forgot to say. We're recruiting right now.
Yes, that too. We need people. Like desperately. Because out of our four podcasts, three of them are only me and Bovywan. So if you are interested in joining a podcast about movies and TV, comic books, or video games, please send your submissions to deadman@deathstoreprods.com. That's me. With a short audio clip of you talking about a comic you've read recently, a movie or TV show you watched recently, or a game you played recently. I'm including the email, your Skype name. Then I will get back to you when I can. So yeah, how you doing, man?
I'm okay.
Took a little while to answer there.
You don't normally ask me questions like how I'm doing. It's normally straight to business.
Every once in a while, I'll ask. You know, I want to be a good boss. I want to get to know the lives of people working for me.
You know, my life right now is pretty much working on events for Saturday.
Okay.
By the way, perhaps I should briefly announce that. If you're in London, Ontario this Saturday, you can go to London Central Library, study room 3A between the hours of 2 and 4, and there's a Death Door Prods gathering going on, I hope.
Which I will not be at.
Probably not. I'll be there. There'll be some other people there. There might be cookies.
Damn it. Always holding events where I can't get to them.
I'm sorry.
Well, because of that, I guess I need to go. I guess I could go first this week, so yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, so first up, I've watched the Netflix original series Hemlock Grove. It's bad.
Yeah, I'm sure a Netflix original series is going to be phenomenal.
Well, I've heard good things about House of Cards. But Hemlock Grove, it's bad. It's just bad. So, let me get the basic premise down for you guys. It's like a shittier Twin Peaks. Like a really shittier Twin Peaks.
I've never seen Twin Peaks, so.
Well, yeah, so basically in the town of Hemlock Grove, a young girl is murdered in a really horrendous fashion. A lot of people think it's an animal attack, but some people, the people I will call the idiots, believe it's werewolves. And in a shocking coincidence, a family of gypsies move into the area, and the son of that family is a werewolf. What are the odds? And there's also this family that, like, the matriarch of which is Famke Jensen doing a terrible British accent. Like, seriously, half the time she sounds like she's trying to do a Romanian accent and failing at it. And they have some really deep-seated hatred against gypsies for some reason, like the whole town does, because, I don't know, racism.
Good old-fashioned racism.
Yeah, so there's this one girl who is, she says she's a novelist, but I doubt she's ever actually written anything. And she believes that, you know, this kid is a werewolf because his index finger and middle finger are the same length, which is apparently a telltale sign of being a werewolf. But it's terrible because the length of his fingers keep changing from scene to scene. And, like, Famke Jensen's son is some weird, like, rich asshole who's, like, telepathic, who's able to, like, push his thoughts onto someone else and, like, control him a bit, but he gives him a nosebleed. And I have no idea what the fuck is going on in this show. Like, it's supposed to be some big murder investigation, and if they just had to focus on that, that would have been fine. But no, they have all this other extraneous bullshit. Apparently someone agrees with me. And it...
Destro Prod's podcast, yeah, just, recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, there's just, like, all this extraneous bullshit going on where, like the psychic kid's cousin got impregnated by an angel in her dream, and now she's, like, giving virgin birth and really wants to fuck the werewolf kid. Because she keeps having, like, wet dreams about him on the school bus to fucking school, and like, Famke Jensen is some kind of witch or something, because she gave birth to this, like, 7-foot-tall, fucked-up face glowing thing that's empathic or something. Her name is Shelley. Then... the show's really bad. But I still watched it for, like, 5 episodes. I couldn't stop. It was scary. And I'm just wondering if there's something, like, if like, what is wrong with me is affecting my ability to stop watching terrible TV shows.
I know Starchild can't stop watching any, like, especially if he gets a copy of something, he has to complete his collection. This includes the Twilight movies.
Oh, God. But I will say this for the show. They showed, like, a full-on werewolf transformation, and there was one aspect of it that I hadn't seen in any other werewolf transformation that I thought that, like, really enjoyed. So, you know how, like, in most werewolf transformation scenes, like, the skin starts getting ripped off or something, or, like, the fingernails pop off and, like, other fingernails grow back in? In every single transformation, the eyes always change into wolf eyes. In this transformation, the human eyes get pushed out and replaced with wolf eyes.
Oh, gross.
It was really cool. It was something I hadn't seen before. And it was actually a really interesting new, like, wrinkle in the werewolf, like, myth, and I actually really liked it. But the rest of the show is absolute garbage. So moving on to the next show, Ren and Stimpy. Happy, wow, joy.
That's an excellent blast from the past.
Yeah, So, full disclosure, I had never seen Ren and Stimpy before. Like, I knew of its existence, and I'd seen other shows that that guy had made. I just never actually saw Ren and Stimpy. Because, you know, I grew up in a shit town that didn't get Nickelodeon. So, I watched a few episodes of the Ren and Stimpy, and it's good. It's really good.
I think my favorite episode was, although I don't remember it very well, was Don't Whiz on the Electric Fence.
Yeah, I didn't get that far into it. I only saw like a few episodes. But I met Powder Toast Man.
Powder Toast Man is amazing.
I must say, I want Powder Toast now. Like, why waste time like getting the bread out of the freezer, putting it in, like setting it to the right temperature so that it doesn't come out too burnt or too wet or something? Just fucking shake out some toast out of a can. Perfect every time. Make this happen, science.
I'm gonna say when I was young, I had the Ren and Stimpy SNES game. That's how much I enjoyed Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I didn't... Like I said, I only watched a couple episodes, but from what I did watch, it was really good. Like, the animation, while it did look a bit dated at times, especially with the backgrounds, it was still held up really well. The humor was really great. And, yeah, it's a great show. It's a great show. I don't know how much I can actually say about it, because it's Ren and fucking Stimpy.
Just yeah, there are certain aspects that if you're an adult and you enjoy SpongeBob at all, watch Ren and Stimpy because it's like 1,000 times better.
Oh, yeah, it's fucking fantastic. And speaking of fucking fantastic, I watched the first two seasons of Justice League Unlimited. So for those who don't know what this is a sequel series to the Justice League series that came out a while ago. And it is bigger. It's Justice League, but bigger. So I talked about Justice League on the show before, like a couple weeks back, I think. And I said, like, I loved that show. Like the characterization they did was fantastic. The stories they did were really great. And it was all done really well with, like, each character getting their own, like, time to shine a spotlight and each character showing their own, like, flaws with everything. And it ended on a fucking huge high note with it actually ended with some shitty epilogue thing that tied into Batman Beyond. But the, like, proper ending before the epilogue was... So, in the show, Hawk Girl... is an alien. She's from the planet Thanagar, which is a planet made up of hawk people. They are at war with the Gordanians, an evil race of lizard people, who I believe in the comics were the ones who bought Starfire and sold her into slavery. She's in the Teen Titans. So anyway, they're all at war and shit, and then a Thanagarian, you know, armada shows up on Earth and takes over. It turns out Hawk Girl was actually a spy the entire time. She never actually showed up, you know, as under any kind of exploratory mission. She was there to scout out Earth's defenses and then report back to the Thanagarian High Command. Which turns out, like the guy leading the charge on her home on Earth is her fiance. Huh. Which got a bit awkward because at this point in the universe, she was fucking Green Lantern.
Well, sucks which to is, be you know, Green Lantern.
Just a bit. So, yeah. So, turns out she was, you know, a traitor the entire time. And then the Thanagarians are saying, okay, so we're building a, like, force field around the planet so that we'll be able to use this as a base of operations to fight off the Gordanian armada. But it turns out what they're actually doing is building a space bridge that would, like, chain a bunch of planets together that would be able to warp the Thanagarian armada inside the Gordanian fleet and take it out from the inside. But in doing this, it would destroy the Earth. So the Justice League, so the Justice League destroy, like, take down the fucking evil people and, you know, save the world and everything. Then, you know, cut to a few years later, and the Justice League is recruiting. Meaning that, you know, there's a lot more heroes now. In fact, I believe I read a statistic somewhere, like, online, that the first episode of Justice League Unlimited had 30 heroes on screen at one time.
Wow.
And
intense.
Yeah. Some of them voiced by Nathan Fillion. Like Southern Nathan Fillion. So there's that.
Awesome.
Yeah, so... And so that was kind of the whole thing with Justice League Unlimited. It was going to be Justice League, but bigger. And it was a direct continuation. Like, they picked up the story threads that happened. Like Green Lantern was now dating some girl named Vixen, but he still had feelings for Shayera, Hot Girl. And those two, like, they still had... Like, he still felt betrayed by her and everything. And like, the relationship between Batman and Wonder Woman kept, like, started getting more intense. And... There was a really great episode where Wonder Woman was turned into a pig, and just seeing Batman doing everything he can to try to, like, turn her back, even going so far as to sing at a jazz club. It was great.
I'm now trying to imagine Batman singing at a jazz club.
We also got a good chunk of episodes focused on The Question. So for those who know who The Question is, he's a detective. But he's also kind of crazy. What he does is he's basically every conspiracy theorist you've ever heard of, all rolled into one ball, but he's actually right about everything. Like the girl, like he had a theory, like the girl, like the fucking, like the girl guys, like the Girl Scouts somehow led to like a fascist regime taking over China or something. And he was actually right about it. Yeah, that was the basic, and yeah, it was, the entire series is just dealing with bigger situations, bigger characters, more characters, and it always does it fantastically well. It always manages to focus on the characters that they're focusing on, give us a good amount of history, a good amount of like character, like actual character motivation, everything behind these people, and give us a sense that we, you know, they actually are characters. They're not just, hey, here's some asshole that you're traveling with. Just, meh. Any character they choose to focus on, they focus on really well, and we get a good story from them. And the animation for the season has like gone above and beyond what it was in the previous series, because previously there were some animation hiccups. In this one, I have not been able to see a single one. The animation has been fucking fluid and fantastic. It's a great show. It just League Unlimited is fantastic.
All right.
It's really good, and it's a shame that it's off the air now. And it's a shame that, you know, fucking Young Justice got canceled too, because that the ended with Darkseid. How do you end a show on Darkseid? Like, seriously, like it wasn't like ending a show with a fighting Darkseid. It's ending a show with, oh hey, Darkseid is here. Fucking Desaad was there, and everything. You don't end with showing Darkseid, okay? So anyway, moving on. I've watched some Doctor Who. And so... I watched the episode Hyde and Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Oh, I haven't watched those two.
Yeah, so these are the two most recent episodes. And so do you remember a few weeks back... when we were talking about Stephen Moffat writing the thing and how he's much better at writing Sherlock because he is adapting previous works while in Doctor Who, it's his own universe where he has free reign?
Yeah.
It seems he is... Like, in the briefest episodes, everything he seems to be doing is calling back to previous Doctors. Like, they brought back the Eye of Harmony.
Oh, really?
Yes, the Eye of Harmony. Yes, which in this one is a which in this one is a star. No, you see, actually, the Eye of Harmony, as it turns out, is actually the engine of the TARDIS. Not the heart, the engine. It is a star about to go supernova, kept in like stasis at the brink of going supernova. From what I understand. And yeah, so yeah, it was. And so, like, just and thinking about all these things, like, they, like, he brought back this, like, brought back the Great Intelligence or whatever the fuck it's called. He brought back the Ice Warriors. He brought back a whole bunch of stuff. And it seems like most of the stuff he's doing for this season is just bringing old stuff back.
Yeah, I had noticed that, and I was aware of it. And I'd say it's probably why this half of the season is better than the previous half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... But anyways, yeah, let's get into Hyde first. So Hyde is the ghost hunting one. They make a Ghostbusters joke in the first 10 minutes of the episode, before the title sequence is run.
Well, it didn't take them long when David Tennant was dealing with ghosts either.
Yeah.
The only time they didn't do it was when Christopher Eccleston dealt with ghosts.
Yeah, but like this one, I'm not even sure if it's actually a joke. It's like the doctor shows up at a haunted house, then Clara Silva's like, we're Ghostbusters. Then run title sequence. And so, yeah, so with this episode, it is dealing with psychic people. And like war guilt. And other weird shit. And it eventually has led to like this really disappointing payoff with everything, which I'm not going to spoil here. But they like did this whole thing of like building up this whole like haunted house thing of like, oh my god, there's horrible monsters everywhere, and then it just turns to the exact opposite of it and gets really stupid. In fact, one thing that they do is so the ghost. This is going to be minor spoilers for this, but the ghost for this is. It turns out it's just a woman trapped in an alternate universe. It is in like a pocket dimension that is like running at like millions of times faster than regular time. So like it's like there's a bit where like the doctor like starts going through time, like going like billions of years back in the past, and start like taking pictures of the exact same position like every few million years. And you string them together and then you get to see a woman just running through a forest or like really scared. And it turns out that's the ghost. And the psychic is just getting, like, flashes of her, like, running from something in this other dimension. And the doctor, and, like, Clara's like, so can't we just, like, use the TARDIS to go into the other dimension to care? And the doctor's like, no, like, if the TARDIS goes in there for more than 4 seconds, like, it'll drain its power and it'll die, and we'll be trapped there. Then twice in that episode, they go into the alternate universe for, like, 30 seconds. Both times, the TARDIS is fucking fine.
Huh.
Yeah, so it... Much like the Ice Warriors episode, it had good potential for something really cool, but didn't make any use of it whatsoever. Then, moving on to the next episode, Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. The TARDIS gets locked in, gets like picked up by some salvagers, by some scrappers. They are there to try to junk the ship. They're there to try to junk the TARDIS and sell it off for parts. And so when this happens, they get sucked in, and then Clara gets lost inside the TARDIS. You know, as you do. And so the doctor and the salvaging crew, they have to go into the center of the TARDIS to try to get her out. And so this, I believe this might create a continuity error. So the TARDIS, for the most part, like, the TARDIS on the outside is laying down on its side in a pile of junk. But then once they get into the TARDIS, they are, you know, standing normally. Like, gravity is relative in the TARDIS, depending on, you know, like, what level the, like, world is at inside of it. I mean, like, no matter what the orientation of the TARDIS outside, inside it'll all be normal gravity. But then, if you remember when Matt Smith first took over as a doctor, there was a bit where he fell through the TARDIS, like the TARDIS was on its side, and he fell into it and kept falling like it was normal, like it was a normal, like regular Earth gravity.
Like regular orientation. The one thing I can say is that if you fall into the open TARDIS, you already have velocity. It doesn't matter which way gravity is pulling, you're still going to travel in that direction.
But when the Doctor like fell into the TARDIS for that one time at the beginning, it wasn't like he, you know, jumped from the sky. He was sitting on the brim of it and then fell backwards. So that would have been, he went like a foot and then fell on his back. With that, like when he did that thing, he, you know, fell through multiple levels that landed in the swimming pool in the library. Which I guess is pretty deep, because, you know, we had to have a rope. That's another thing. He had to have a rope to climb down into the TARDIS.
Oh, as a note, as well, at the time it was repairing and destroyed, so it's possible the gravity manipulation wasn't working.
Possible, but it was still kind of stupid with that. So anyway, in this episode, some things that happen. Clara learns the Doctor's name.
Wow, what a waste of that plot point.
Yep. Because you see, in the TARDIS, in the library, where there is no swimming pool, there is a book called The History of the Time War. And Clara, doing the thing that I hate in film and TV, opens the book to the middle of the book somewhere. Because, you know, why would you want to start a book? Why would you want to start a book that you haven't read before at the beginning? You're just... She opens it up and says, "Oh, that's your name." Then time gets reset. She forgets.
Really?
Yep.
Because during the Time War, he was still referred to as the Doctor.
Yep. But apparently, the Doctor is just a nickname that he came up with after looking into the fucking time vortex. He actually has a name. Apparently all Gallifreyans have a name. They aren't just the Master and the Doctor. Like, the Master actually has a name. He's not just the Master.
Yes, they have the actual names, but they are very particular about not using them.
Yeah, well, the Doctor, his name was discovered. He has it written in a book in his fucking library. Along with the history of the Time War, because I guess he documented that. In a book.
Why would he write down his name?
Because fuck you. I guess.
It's the question he's been running from his whole life. He doesn't want people to know for some reason.
Yeah, which I'm guessing we'll be finding out at the end of the season, because with the teaser image that was released for the end of the season, the episode is the name of the Doctor. I bet it's George. His name is Dr. George. No, it isn't. It's fucking stupid. Yeah, it...
Anyways, anytime they, like, put a little thing in there to waste a plot point, I don't like it.
Yeah, like that was a big thing. Like, it was, like, like Clara, she figured out what the Doctor's name was, and she went to go, like, talk to him about it, and he stopped her from talking about it, and then saved the day with a grenade, or something. The episode was kind of stupid. And these last two episodes I haven't really liked very much. Like, they had potential. Like, going into the fucking heart of the TARDIS, like fucking ghosts and shit, they could have had something really cool. But they always end up, Steve Moffat, or whoever was writing the episodes at the time, ended up squandering everything with really idiotic shit.
Which is exactly how I ended up feeling about The Power of Three. Had a really cool setup, progressed nicely, and then he just sonic screwdrivered everything better in like 3 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so moving on. To Continuum. So Continuum, I believe I talked about this series before on the show. It is a Canadian TV series where, in the far-off future of 2077, corporations have taken over the world. A group of terrorists who believe the people should be free from the corporations and have a regular government are sentenced to be executed. Then time travel happens. They get sent back to modern day.
Time travel. This isn't going to make me mad.
Yeah, they get sent back to modern day, and then so does a cop. And the cop is there to try to stop them with the help of the younger version of the person who invented all the technology that future people use. So in the first season, things went down. Like the leader of the terrorist cell blowing himself up to destroy a building. So yeah, now in the second season, the future genius guy, whose name is Alec, he's trying to get a job at the equivalent of a Best Buy. Because, you know, when you're a super genius who develops some revolutionary computer technology in your barn, a Best Buy is the place to be.
Yeah, you gotta make money somehow.
Yeah, and so while he's doing that, he's like moping around doing all that shit. The cop from the future, whose name is Kira, has not been able to get a hold of him, which is unfortunate because he's the one who, you know, controls all of her technology and future shit. So, yeah, and the new, like, big hiccup with this season is that there is an agent from, like, CSIS who believes that she is a terrorist working with Liberate, which is the organization that is trying to take down the fucking corporations. And I will say this for the show. I do kind of like it. Like the future tech that the cop uses is actually kind of interesting. Like, she has a gun that folds out from a handle into a full gun. She has like a bodysuit that lets her turn invisible and like generate stun charges and stuff. She has these like cool contact lenses that let her like analyze and do like crime scene investigations and stuff by just looking at the crime scene. She's able to like figure out bullet trajectory and, you know, relative vantage points just by looking at like stills of a crime scene. And it's really cool.
So she has detective mode.
Exactly. The world actually turns light blue when she activates it. And that's really cool. Another thing that's really good is they never really address what changes in the future. Like, there is no weird fucking, like, paradox thing of the more she changes, the more likely she is to erase herself from existence. She just went back in time, and now she's part of this timeline. And anything she does there will change the future, but won't affect her. Or anyone else who was brought back in time. And it's actually kind of refreshing of just a, hey, don't worry about it. Just be chill, okay? It's fucking time travel. If we talk about, it's like what Looper tried to do, but where Looper failed, this so far is succeeding. Of just, hey, don't fucking worry about it. And I gotta say, it's really refreshing. There is no fucking like stupid bullshit with paradoxes or anything. There is no weird fucking things like going into the future and seeing all the changes that are happening. It's just the present and Kira's flashbacks of when she was alive in her future. And I like it.
Yeah, it sounds like a good setup for a time travel show. To be honest.
Yeah, like it's just, hey, I have future tech and I'm in the past. Hijinks ensue. And yeah, it... Well, and so in terms of story stuff, it's kind of generic. Like, in terms of what is actually going on with just stupid, like, we're building an army of people to support our cause. And their cause is like something out of from like 2005. Like, down with the corporations, man. The corporations are controlling the government and shit. You know, like, down in the ether, I only buy like no-name brand tampons and shit. Or something. I don't fucking know what people do like that. And that can get a little grating at times, especially when it's someone trying to pull off like a badass soldier thing. Like, the corporations are controlling your mind. You're just one of their puppets. And it just gets this really weird, like, cognitive dissonance in my head of really badass soldier guy speaking like a fucking hippie from the 60s.
Well, except that in his situation, the corporation is controlling. The corporations are controlling everybody.
Not at this point in history.
Hmm. Of course, if corporations did control everybody, not a whole lot would change.
Yeah, there'd just be less brand. Less brand diversity on the shelves. It's like everyone will buy Coca-Cola and wear Old Navy jeans. Everyone will watch Fox and, I don't know, play games made by EA.
Oh, God, no. Give us some other... Give us Valve as our game dictator.
Valve isn't a corporation, man. Valve has a human face to it. EA is just a corporate conglomerate of fucking computers that run on money. That's why they want DRM and everything, man. EA is actually run by the machines. They're the singularity. But yeah, so Continuum. Second season has started, and I like the things that it's setting up. It's got, you know, some friction happening between our two leads. A new kind of threat thing that isn't just some fucking future dude who's trying to expose things. It's just a guy who saw something and is now working his hardest to try to prove what he saw and he's not crazy. And yeah, I like, and there's also set up a little kind of a thing because, so in the future, so future Alec, he sent a message back in time with Kira because he's the one who orchestrated everything for some reason. We don't know what it is. So he sent a message back in time saying, hey, do everything you can to not be me. And so Alec and Kira aren't sure if this is like old Alec trying to mess with them, if it's like trying to get something that would like change the timeline in such a way that would make him even more powerful or some weird bullshit like that. And so Alec is just against doing anything like tech thing because he doesn't want to follow his, because he doesn't want to turn into some evil like world ruler. But Kira wants him to do it because she just wants to get home to her family. And so it's a, so it's an interesting little wrinkle in their relationship in terms of things going on. What's also kind of nice is between the two of them, there is nothing going on aside from work relationship.
Sweet.
Can't say that about her and her cop friend, but, you know, he's a cop. What do you expect? They need to get laid somehow. And also, just something that's kind of cool, this show takes place in Vancouver.
Cool.
Like, actually in Vancouver. It wasn't just shot there. It actually is taking place in Vancouver, which I like. It's actually some Canadian shows out there. So then, moving on to my final show, Castle. It was
that
a clip.
Sounds disappointed.
It was a clip show. Yep.
Of all the things to do, why a clip show?
Well, actually, that isn't my final one. I have one more after that, but yeah. So with this episode, it was they were trying to find a bomb, like some guy blew up a building or something, and so they tracked him down to his house, and Beckett stepped on a pressure plate in his apartment. And now she's stuck there with a bomb, and Castle is there to keep her calm by regaling her with the tales of how she was attracted to him when they first met. And then flashbacks with really shitty pop songs playing over them. Like every single one. And then it cuts back to the real world where apparently the flashbacks are actually happening within the context of the story. So I'm guessing they just pull out their phones and then start playing really shitty pop music while they're regaling them, while they're regaling each other with the tales of their relationship together.
That's one way to explain it.
Yeah, and hey, guess what? Spoiler alert, Gates knew the entire time that Castle and Beckett were fucking. And Gates don't give a fuck. Which, no. No. They set up her character right at the beginning as fucking Iron Gates. Not the most original name, but, you know, she was like internal affairs. She was the person who, like, cracked down on people for doing this shit. And she's like, oh, it's fine. What the fuck? Who cares? Even though she hates Castle. It really fucking pisses me off.
Technically, there's no protocol against it, so...
It's a conflict of interest thing. Like their entire... Like, if there was no protocol thing, then why did they keep it... Why did they try to keep it secret for so long?
I don't know. They don't really explain it that well.
Exactly. The entire reason that they didn't want Gase to find out the relationship was because they believed Gase was with them up for some reason. But if she actually did know, like, they were together the whole time, then it makes everything they've ever done to kind of keep the relationship a secret completely fucking pointless. And...
Well, I seem to remember the reasoning being, we're not ready for people to know yet.
No, like, they actually... There was some thing where, like, they actually did say that if Gates found out, they would force them to... She would force them to break up as partners. And...
I think they're trying really forcefully to humanize Gates.
No! You already had the humanizer episode with the weird fucking doll thing. Yeah, it's just fucking... God damn it. But anyway, to end on a strong note, psych.
Okay.
Yeah, so, previously on psych, Juliet, Sean Spencer's girlfriend, found out that he is not psychic. And she took this poorly. And so, previous episodes, it was a relatively okay 100th episode, and then 101st episode was fucking awesome, which is doing this whole dual life thing that was going on. Then we get into the 102nd, 103rd episodes, which I believe was... Well, so the 103rd episode, I believe it's 103rd episode, is when Sean runs for mayor.
What?
He runs for mayor to try to catch a murderer. Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah, so in this thing, so this episode, we learned that Sean is actually friends with the mayor of Santa Barbara. Because, you know, he saw so many crimes, the mayor is like, hey, I want to get up and close, I want to get up close and personal with the guy who's, like, keeping this city crime-free, kind of. And then he gets murdered. And so then Sean believes that the new guy who's going to be the mayor is the guy who murdered him. So he doesn't want a murderer to be, like, in charge of the city and the police department. So he runs for mayor to try to postpone things so that they can get real evidence on him and put him away. And just seeing him run for mayor with the most retarded platform ever.
It's like a platform?
Thunderdome. That's it. He wanted a Thunderdome.
Okay.
And he also there's some really great bits of the show in the episode that I actually can't talk about too much because it'll ruin them in terms of a joke, but it's just really funny just seeing Sean try to be political and failing hard at it. But this episode also starts building on more of the relationship the relationship between Sean and Juliet that has happened since, you know, she found out. And there's this really great bit near the end of the episode that actually, like, makes her realize something about Sean that she didn't before. And it gave hope for the relationship, which I won't spoil what it is, but I thought it was really well done. I thought it was something that the season should have done. I thought it was something that this season should do. And they actually did it. And it played really well. It was fucking great. And so then I remember the 102nd episode was the one where Juliet was, where the one was the one where Sean and Sean was moving out of Juliet's place. And then Juliet was getting roommates and Sean was trying to, like, drive them off because he didn't want anyone to move in with her. Like, at one point he did the Buffalo Bill routine. Yeah, like someone's moving in and they you see him start rubbing his nipples like, what does it do with the lotion? Then it was great. And yeah, so then that is just kind of a standard episode of them, of like Sean and Gus doing their thing and everyone thinking they're crazy, and then oh boy, no wait, they're right. But then it ends with the realization that, you know, Juliet, while she does, you know, still fucking, while she does still have like some really animosity towards Sean for lying to her for so many goddamn years, she still does love him. And that's what I really like with this show. That's what I really like with this. The fact that the relationship has consequences, but it, the fact that, like, the lie that Sean told for like the entirety of the relationship actually had consequences on their relationship, but the relationship still happened. The emotions they felt were still real, and it's not just, oh, you lied to me, so now I fucking hate you. It's, you lied to me, and that really hurts, so now you need to get out so we can reassess where we are in terms of what our relationship is now. And I like it.
Of course, it doesn't work well for just, you know, having time apart and reassessing if you're going to get roommates immediately.
That's kind of... I know, it's... But it's kind of one of the... It's one of the jokes in the show. It's one of the jokes in that episode. And, yeah. Yeah, while it isn't like... It's TV. You kind of need to just move things along at a pretty breakneck pace.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't like any actual, we didn't get much like time scale as to what, as to when it was actually, like how long after the initial thing that Sean moved out, like started packing up his things. Because this is Sean, he could have procrastinated for months. But anyway. Yeah, so Psych, it is still really good. I still really like it. And I'm looking forward to seeing where the show goes. I'm feeling that it's just going to be getting to the point where they just actually do get back together, and it'll be way too quick for what I think they should do with the show and their relationship. But either way, I do still like the show. It's still this season is really good. I do really like it. It's funny. It's got decent like murder and mystery and crime solving shit to it. They like the new thing that's going on with Psych with Sean's observation powers is really cool, and they're setting up a lot of really cool things with the show in terms of what is actually happening in the world of the show. So yeah,
one thing to remember though is that it will always be a longer and more substantial breakup than the Pawns.
Yes. Didn't they broke up a lot and really quickly.
Technically just the once.
Technically, but
they got divorced and then back together in one episode.
Yeah, that, oh god, that was retarded. But anyway. So, Bobby-wan, what'd you been watching then?
All right, I actually have a list this time, so I'm pretty prepared.
Yay!
So, I guess I'm going to start with television. Robot Chicken.
Ah, yes, Robot Chicken.
Lots and lots of Robot Chicken. Moving on. Because how the hell do you explain it?
Yeah, Robot Chicken is kind of like Ren and Stimpy, where it's kind of hard to explain the show without ruining all the jokes the show has. Yeah, you have to kind of like know what it is in order to talk about it well.
I will say one thing. I was watching it on DVD, and it's one of the later seasons. I don't remember which season, to be honest. But it was a later season. They didn't do this in the beginning. But they draw nipples on the dolls.
Ew.
Yeah.
Also bad as nipples on the bat suit.
I mean, it used to be like in the show, it came up as censored, and then when you see it on the DVD, it's just, you know, regular Barbie, no nipples.
Yeah.
Now they've gone to the effort of putting nipples on them.
No. It ruins the joke. Like the joke inherent with the guitar show is that, oh, hey, they're action figures. And dolls and stuff. And putting nipples on them, making them anatomically correct, is just off.
Oh, and one more thing. This season really hates on Annie.
Like, okay.
They show some real hate for Annie. In some of the sketches they do.
Okay. Just out of nowhere, hey, guess what? Fuck you, Annie.
Well, they basically set her up as a terrible, terrible person.
Is she as bad as little Hitler?
No, she's not as bad as little Hitler. But you might remember the one
little Hitler, little Hitler.
Where Annie's like, it sure is a hard knock life. And the other kid's just like, no, there are kids who have it so much worse than us. What the fuck is wrong with you? And there's ones that go more extreme than that. But anyways, that's all I have to say about Robot Chicken. Moving on.
Yeah.
And I have any more TV, so I'm going to talk about a couple movies. First one, The Croods.
Okay, I have not seen really anything of this movie. I haven't even seen any trailers for it.
It was better than I was expecting, to be honest.
Okay, so what's the premise for this movie?
So, we've got The Croods. They're Nicolas Cage and his character Grug and his caveman family.
Just call him Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage.
I'm going to end up referring to him as Grug quite a bit, but we'll get into that.
Okay.
And Eep is all rebellious and doesn't like that she has to constantly go to the cave.
She's one of voice by Emma Stone.
Yes. Voiced by Emma Stone.
Fitting name.
Then Ryan Reynolds shows up.
Of course he does.
His character's named Guy.
Of course he is.
He's a not caveman, but they all speak English.
Okay, so he's Cro-Magnon?
I don't know.
No, let's not get into real cave people with this.
So, Eep gets enticed out of the cave when she sees fire, because Ryan Reynolds has fire.
Of course he does. He's Ryan Reynolds. He probably blows a stick on his abs and a burst into flames.
And so, after a bit of interaction between those two, we find out that the world is going to come, quote-unquote, come to an end. Basically, it's a tectonic plate shift that's happening at a very small time scale. For some reason.
Hmm.
Like the continent breaking up all at once.
Okay. Well, it's a kids movie. What do you expect?
Yeah. Then again, everything this movie shows makes me think they're not on Earth, because none of the strange species they show ever existed.
Again, it's a kids' movie. They don't give a fuck. They're just like, oh, look, a weird thing that doesn't exist. Yay! It's a dinosaur!
Ignoring the bad science, though, it's honestly a decent story. So basically, it's then the journey of the family leaving the cave and going to where Guy says it's safe. One thing that never gets addressed is that his plan is really fucking stupid. Because he's basically a goddamn hippie.
Fucking hippies.
And so his plan is to jump on the sun and ride it to tomorrow.
Wait, jump on the sun?
Yes, because what he thinks happens is the sun goes through the sky and then comes to rest in the night sky.
Dumbass.
So yeah, his idea is to jump on the sun and ride it tomorrow. So to do that, he wants to climb mountains.
Well, I guess that fits for considering the fact that they're cave people and idiots.
Anyways, once again, it luckily never gets addressed that his plan is really fucking stupid. If this movie wanted to go real dark, they would have had them all climb the mountain, jump at the sun, and fucking die.
Yeah, that would have been great.
And then Nicolas Cage would be able to be like, I was right, because every story he tells ends with, this happened, and then they died! Because that's Nicolas Cage's character, and that's very important, is that he doesn't do new things. It's just like, we have the cave, we're safe in the cave, we get food, we come back to the cave. That's it.
Oh, so he's the man. He's against the change of the new generation, man.
And yeah, that's the thing I was about to bring up, is that the worst delusion this movie suffers from is that it's Eep's story. The movie seems to the movie seems to think that the story is about Eep. It's about her journey, about her family changing. That's why she's narrating, and it's not. It's Grug's story. Eep's character does not develop at all, except for one thing. And even her minor character development has less to do with what she does and more to do with what Grug does.
Okay.
So yeah, this movie clearly picked the wrong protagonist because it should be Grug.
Mm-hmm.
Although trying to set up a love interest with him and Ryan Reynolds would be interesting.
The world's first gay couple. I mean, Ryan Reynolds, I think he was already in an episode of Family Guy where he was gay for Peter. So, hey. Could have been something really interesting for the kids. Introduce them to the concept of gay marriage really early. Like fucking Stone Age.
Yeah, the reason... Sorry, go ahead.
Because people at Westboro just fucking pissing themselves in anger.
Anyways, the reason I say it's more Grug's story than Eep's is because the story's all about how things are changing. And for Eep, this is essentially just what she wanted. So her character doesn't have to go through any change. She just has to be wide-eyed and amazed at everything. For Grug...
She's like, yay, everything I wanted is happening to me! Hee!
Grug, it's pretty much the complete opposite of what he wanted. He has to deal with a lot of things changing. He no longer lives in the cave. All the previous rules of the place he lived no longer apply because he's in a new place. He has to transfer the protector role over to a new person. He has to use his brain, which is a plot point that I thought was rather stupid. It's like, oh, you never actually have ideas. Well, yes, he does.
His idea to say the same.
Yeah, and he comes up with many ideas on how to keep things the same. They just don't really work.
Yeah. As they wouldn't.
But yeah, and then it's him who has to deal with his life changing, and he has to develop as a person. And honestly, there's a huge amount of time where the audience is completely left with just Grug and nobody else as he's going through all these character developments. Completely independent of the rest of the family. So why do they think that Eep is our protagonist?
Because she's voiced by Emma Stone. I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, too bad. This is Nicolas Cage's movie.
Yeah, I know, but like, it's kind of hard to like sell a movie with Nicolas Cage nowadays.
It is, but
unless he's in like a supporting role, he's not exactly, you know, hot money.
It's it was definitely a good voice acting role for him though. Quite a few times during the movie, I found myself entertained by just closing my eyes and trying to imagine Nicolas Cage in the recording booth. Right from the opening of the movie, actually, because, you know, he's scaring things away by making his caveman noises.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot replicate them because I'm not Nicolas Cage, but somewhere along the lines of...
Yeah, what I'd probably do with that is, like, kind of... What I would do is I just go through the movie and, like, find scenes where I'd be able to insert other Nicolas Cage lines. just find a place where I can just get him, just get Grug to say, "No, not the bees, not the bees."
Actually, I thought that joke to myself. There's piranha fish.
Not the piranha fish. Not the piranha fish. Oh, they're in my eyes.
One of them come flying at the family, and I'm just like, "Not the bees, not the bees."
Yeah, just find, just go through there and just like find bits where I can just put him doing his fucking Big Daddy voice from Kick-Ass. See if there's just a position so I can start just inserting random lines from National Treasure. Those would be less funny. Just, I gotta find like more crazy Nicolas Cage roles and just run with those and just dub them over in when I get my hands a copy of the Croods. Coming soon, a really shitty dub of the Croods with the Nicolas Cage lines.
But there is actually, and I've mentioned this to you before, Dead Man, but not on the movies podcast. There's a scene where Nicolas Cage has to cage it up.
Yep.
And it's a plot point.
Nicolas Cage is his own plot point.
And, yeah, no, it's very well set up that the only way they're going to survive is by him caging it up, because Ryan Reynolds takes a try at it and, you know, does suitable acting and doesn't work.
Mm.
And then Nicolas Cage takes over and cages it up and, yeah, well, that works.
You need to ham it up like a son of a bitch. Be able to smell the thing from the next town over.
But they also, they set up the character to be able to cage it up whenever he wants.
caging it up isn't just a plot point, it's a character trait?
Actually, I wouldn't say it's a character trait, because they set up a character who could cage it up whenever he wants, but he doesn't. There's a lot of points in the role where he's very quiet and reserved and very fitting of the character. Honestly, like, Nicolas Cage did very well in this role.
Yeah, like he doesn't cage up because he knows the power of the cage. He wouldn't just let that up for anything. He knows with great cage comes great responsibility.
I have to imagine the directors of these movies, though, like other ones he's done, they try to give him reasonable direction and they get what they get, and it's like, ah, whatever, just roll with it. And this one, they just put him in the recording booth, just go ahead, go nuts as much as you want. Well, he's kind of reserved, isn't he?
Yeah, just like put him in a recording booth and just like, hey guys, where's the script? Just don't worry about it. Just do whatever you want. It'll be fine. We'll let it all in post. So anyway,
I guess there's other characters who should be talked about.
I guess
there's the mother of the family. I can't remember her name.
Is there anyone whose name
hardly comes up?
Is there anyone whose name you do remember?
Grug, Eep, Guy, and Belt.
Guys, let's talk about Belt.
Belt is a sloth.
Okay.
He's also a belt.
Fitting.
He's Guy's belt.
At any point did he turn to the camera and say, Eh, it's a living.
No, no. He does this one thing, though, where whenever something dramatic happens or is said, he goes, dun, 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 which when I saw it in the trailer, I'm like, okay, I've seen this like 5 times in the fucking trailer. It's going to be really annoying, isn't it? It wasn't.
Huh.
I don't even think the thing did it 5 times in the movie. They fucking added that shit to the trailer.
Yeah, of course. It's the trailer. It's what they do. Anyway.
But yeah, that Belt's little additions were always funny, entertaining.
Okay, then. But so
it's a sloth. It doesn't do a lot.
You can only get so much of a sloth.
But actually, probably one of my favorite characters, just for her interactions with Nicolas Cage, is the mother-in-law.
Oh.
Nicolas Cage's mother-in-law.
Okay.
There's this thing that happens throughout the entire movie of him counting people, being really hopeful that she's not there. And being like, oh.
So standard in-law jokes, then.
Yeah, and I guess she starts every morning by coming out of the cave and saying, I'm still alive!
Just let him know. Just so he has that thought throughout the rest of the day. Just, oh, God. She's still alive. So what about his wife's in-laws? Like, where are Nicolas Cage's parents? Are they dead?
I haven't heard anything about them.
What about Nicolas Cage?
It is established that a lot of cavemen are dead and that they're pretty much the last ones in their area.
Okay, so I guess Nicolas Cage's father-in-law is dead too. Because you said the mother-in-law is there, but they didn't mention the father-in-law.
He's probably dead.
Okay, so really dark, this movie, I'm guessing.
Like I said, it could have gone more dark at the end where, like, they all go, okay, let's jump on the sun right to tomorrow. All dead. All dead.
Yeah.
He even went to a nearly dark place where, I don't know, should I get into spoiler territory? Probably not. Never mind. It nearly went to a dark place.
Okay. So, moving on?
Moving on. I have one more movie to talk about.
Okay.
The Man with the Screaming Brain.
Bruce Campbell, right?
Yes.
Okay, I have seen trailers for this movie in the DVD for Evil Dead 2.
Bruce Campbell cheese at its finest. And I've seen Terminal Invasion as well, so.
I think I saw that one too. That's like the one where aliens made an airport.
Yes, and that's not as good as you make it sound. Although that's the best description for the movie. It's not as good as it sounds. But it's as good as it sounds.
Good to begin with. Yeah. So, The Man with Screaming Brain. For those who don't know.
Yeah, I'll set up the basic plot. There's a scientist who has discovered a way to do transplants of any organs, including using partial brains to restore a person's single brain while allowing the personalities to sort of meld together. With one being dominant and one being not.
So it's not really merging personalities together. It's putting another one inside your head.
Yes, only the other one will, like, slowly fade. Kind of like the whole Piccolo Nail fusion.
Oh, okay. So it's really funny. I was Rick Abel saying a lot of, shut up, Nail!
There is a good amount of that. There's a good slapstick humor in this as well. But I'll get into that. So then we get Bruce Campbell. He's just arrived in... Fuck, what country is it in?
He arrived in fuck.
This is Russian, but it's not Russian. Anyway, so yeah. They get a cab driver who's kind of badass. As they find out when they drive through Gypsy Town to avoid traffic. And someone tries to steal their car. The cab driver gets out, holds him at gunpoint, breaks his fingers, and tells him to learn some fucking respect. Their cab driver. Yegor, that's his name. Kind of a fucking boss.
A little bit.
He has some sort of past that we don't know about. Which is fun.
Yeah, I was like mysterious pasts. Well, when they're done well. And well is a very subjective term.
Then they get to the hotel, and then Bruce Campbell goes off for a business meeting, and Yegor fucks his wife.
Okay.
Then, when Bruce Campbell gets back, he finds the woman, Tatoya, in his room, and she starts to hit on him, and then robs him. Basically pickpockets him.
And Bruce Campbell just cannot catch a break in this country.
Runs downstairs. Tatoya kills him.
Okay. Short
and
movie.
And then we find out that Yegor and Tatoya also have a past together. And then Tatoya kills Yegor. Well, then our awesome mad scientist picks up both bodies. And he uses Yegor's brain to fix Bruce Campbell, because Bruce Campbell is rich and influential.
For science. It's all for science.
Of course, Bruce Campbell wakes up and he finds out that he still seems to have Yegor's personality in there. Yegor is able to talk to him. They're able to share some memories, and Yegor even has control over small sections of Bruce Campbell's body. Namely, a hand and a leg.
Ew.
So, that pretty much sets up our movie, of basically Bruce Campbell wanting to go and get revenge on the woman who killed him, as does Yegor, and there's a lot of them not agreeing on things like what to wear, what to eat, what to drink.
It's like the Odd Couple, but in his head.
Yes, and there's great... Well, if you watched Evil Dead 2 and you like the scene where he's fighting with his own hand, imagine a lot of that.
Yeah, there are quite a few... There are, like, very few actors out there who are actually very good at fighting themselves. It's like, immediately come to mind, Bruce Campbell and Edward Norton.
Jim Carrey's okay at it. He's not Edward Norton or Bruce Campbell good, but he passes. He passes.
Yeah. For those who want to see Edward Norton fight himself, go watch Fight Club.
God, that scene's amazing.
It is a fantastic scene. Actually, both scenes, like the one in the parking structure.
Yeah, every scene he's fighting himself, but the one with his boss is just goddamn phenomenal.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. Because that scene actually could only be pulled off with Edward Norton fighting himself. Like that other scene, it could pretty easily be like Edward Norton fighting a dude in a green screen suit, who then just masked out in post.
Yeah, but no. This one had to be him fighting himself, because he was fighting himself.
Yeah, punching himself, throwing himself through things.
all while looking at the man he was about to accuse of doing these things and saying, no, no, please, don't, no, 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 oh.
Yeah, it's like that really shitty Pepsi commercial, but good. So anyway.
Back to Man with Screaming Brain. So another development happens. Tetsuya kills Bruce Campbell's wife.
Who won't this bitch kill?
She runs rampant, pretty much. And she has no motivation for doing so.
Clearly.
And then the mad scientist picks her up, and he doesn't know what to do with her brain. And then his assistant, who, by the way, is played by Ted Raimi.
Of course.
Or, sorry, he actually... There's actually a song that's recorded by him that's used in this movie, and he has a rapper name. It's Ted Rhyme Throw-a Raimi.
Oh, God, that is terrible.
So he's like, why don't we put her brain in this really crappy-looking robot? Basically, imagine if the mannequins from the first episode of the 2005 Doctor Who looked worse.
Oh, wow. Well, since this is like a B-movie, the first question should have been, like, let's put her in this really shitty robot body. Can you fuck it? I don't know. I will put a female brain in a robot unless you can fuck it.
Anyways,
which will then lead to a really awkward and stupid robo sex scene.
She escapes, and also wants revenge on Tetsuya. Everybody wants the same thing.
Yeah. You'd think they'd help each other out, but no.
Well, they technically don't know about each other.
Well,
neither knows the other is still alive.
That's unfortunate.
So anyways, yeah, that's basically how the movie progresses. It's all them trying to kill Tetsuya and the hijinks ensuing.
Yep. Wacky, hilarious, vengeance, multi-brain person hijinks.
Ted Raimi essentially running around being like, oh no, oh no, what do I do? Oh no,
Oh no, is the robot and the multi-brain man and the life and life. Gotta fix the science. So this movie sounds pretty cool.
It is. It's very entertaining. I had something I was about to say, but it's totally slipped my mind. Oh, yes! A couple plot points I liked about it. That one guy I told you about who, Jaeger breaks. Oh, by the way, the actor for Jaeger has, or Jaeger, I guess it's pronounced, has pretty much the coolest name of anyone in this movie. Vladimir Kolev.
Does he drink vodka?
Actually, there's a point when Bruce Campbell wants scotch. Yegor, he wants vodka.
Awesome!
But Bruce Campbell thinks vodka tastes like piss. But Yegor thinks same thing about scotch. So they argue to see what drinks get, but they get both. And then Bruce Campbell decides hand race for who gets to drink what, but they tie and splash in face.
They could have just mixed them. It would have been horrible, but they could have mixed them. Scotch and fucking vodka. Anyway.
Yeah, the one guy who, Yegor broke his finger. That guy's poor finger seems to heal very quickly, but gets broken 4 times by the end of the movie.
the same way every time?
Essentially.
Some people just can't catch a break.
And I guess I could be pretty safe from spoiler warnings on this one.
I think so.
In the end, everyone kind of gets what they want.
Oh, that's a bit anticlimactic.
Well, you know, things have to happen to get there, but everyone essentially gets what they want. Yegor gets to fuck Bruce Campbell's wife. Bruce Campbell still has his wife, only in a younger, hotter body.
Cool. So, yeah, anyway.
That's it for what I've been watching.
Okay, then. So, that does what we're watching, then. On to news. So, our first piece of news. Twitter whore and film director Bryan Singer has taken to the tweeting yet again to confirm that both Bishop and Warpath will be in X-Men Days of Future Past. So we had a pretty decent idea that Bishop was going to be in the movie when Singer announced that Omar Sy from The Untouchables was going to be in the movie. But Warpath kind of came out of nowhere because, you know, he's not exactly a popular mutant nowadays in terms of, like, actually within the Marvel Universe. And he wasn't in the original story, from what I understand. So I'm not entirely sure why he's in there. But anyway, from the looks of things, he'll be played by Native American actor Boo Boo Stewart, since he's, you know, a Native American character. And Stewart, for those that don't know, is one of the gay shirtless werewolves from Twilight.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so the characters, for those who don't know, Warpath is an Apache mutant with superhuman strength, speed, and reflexes. And Bishop is a cop from the future who came back in time to catch future criminals and eventually ended up joining the X-Men. And now he's a villain or something. He's weird. But anyway, yeah, X-Men Days of Future Past is set for release on July 18th, 2014. I'm actually kind of looking forward to this movie. You know, aside from, you know, Boo Boo Stewart, it looks like it has a pretty decent cast in terms of, like, characters that'll be returning cast members, new cast members. Bryan Singer makes a pretty good X-Men movie. So, yeah, it'll be cool seeing how that turns out. Yeah. So, moving on to our next piece of news. So, Variety is reporting that Burr Steers, director of Charlie St. Cloud, and Lily Collins, the actress who played Snow White in Mirror Mirror, are going to be working on the movie adaptation of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
It was only a matter of time.
Yeah. I mean, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter happened. This was the inevitable next one.
Do you think they'll do Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters?
I don't know.
Which is a book.
Yeah, but like, Sea Monsters aren't really a big thing right now. Like, I think the reason they chose Vampire Hunter and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is because zombies and vampires are kind of a big thing right now. So I doubt they'll do like the Sea Monsters one. So yeah, this is currently like in the very early stages of production. They just signed on the director and the star. So it'll probably be a while before we see anything like new develop out of this, aside from, you know, casting updates and stuff like that.
I will say that Pride and Prejudice is the one chick flick I've been made to watch. The only one.
Okay.
And so I only feel it right that I should be able to see it zombified.
Yeah. So moving on to our next piece of news. So Allison Williams, the co-star of the HBO series Girls and Daughters, and the daughter of NBC Nightly News anchor Brian Williams, is in talks for her first leading role in Rosalind, a movie produced by Sean Levy that's based on Shakespeare. It's also, according to Mike Fleming Jr. of Deadline.com, it's also apparently rumored that Williams is on the short list to play the Invisible Woman in the Fantastic Four reboot that's going to be directed by Josh Trank. Now, I don't actually watch Girls, but the fact that there actually is a short list for Fantastic Four reboot characters is kind of interesting. Like after it was announced that Josh Trank would be directing the Fantastic Four reboot, it's been dead in terms of news like that. Like, I've been looking around, going through my news feeds every day, and I have not seen a single mention of Fantastic Four until this. So yeah, we may have an Invisible Woman, or at least an Invisible Woman candidate. And speaking of the Fantastic Four reboot, it's apparently news that Michael B. Jordan, one of the stars from Chronicle, is on the short list to play the Human Torch in the movie.
So we're starting to get some idea of what the cast might be.
Yes. It's just a bit of a weird thing because Michael B. Jordan is black. Allison Williams is not black. And for those that don't know, the Human Torch and the Invisible Woman are brother and sister. So, either they're going to be writing that out of the movie so that they're not brother and sister, or Johnny Storm was adopted.
That's always possible.
Yeah. So anyway, 20th Century Fox, the company that is producing this reboot, declined to comment on the record, but a bunch of individuals apparently close to the studio and the actor have told The Wrap, which is where this article is coming from, that Chronicle director Josh Trank is considering a reunion with Jordan, who was also in Chronicle. So, yeah. I didn't mind Jordan in Chronicle. He was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
I could see him being the Human Torch.
Even if technically his appearance doesn't fit the role.
Yeah,
different versions.
Yeah, his appearance doesn't fit the role. It's not really that big of a deal because, you can write around it.
Yeah.
And, I've never been really averse to change unless the change is really retarded. And this isn't really that retarded. It's not even kind of retarded. It's just a little bit strange. But the guy's not a bad actor, and I think he pulled the role pretty well because he was kind of already the Human Torch in Chronicle, just not on fire.
Yeah, pretty much. He was the cocky one. He was the first one to fly.
Yeah, and then we just see, just get a bunch of the scenes from Chronicle of him flying, and then put fire on him, and you basically have a Human Torch. Boom. So yeah. Moving on to our final piece of news. According to Deadline, Ben Stiller is in talks with Warner Brothers to direct a film version of Pinocchio starring Robert Downey Jr.
This has to be the biggest what-the-fuck news story of the week.
Yeah. So, apparently, the film is based on an idea by Downey himself.
What the fuck, Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah. So, he'll be playing the role of Geppetto, assuming this movie gets actually made, and will be producing the movie alongside his wife, Susan Downey. Yeah. This is strange.
Well, it would at least probably be markedly better than the last live action Pinocchio movie.
Yeah, wasn't that Pinocchio 2000 or something?
I didn't know Pinocchio 2000 existed.
I might just be imagining a fake, terrible Pinocchio movie. But anyway, so a deal hasn't actually been made for Stiller to direct this film, but he's in talks to direct it, and I would be interested to see what a Ben Stiller, Robert Downey Jr. Pinocchio movie would be. Because in all the news stories I've seen recently, this one has been the most interesting. Not in terms of actual content, just in terms of what... Anyway, that was it for news. So, on to new releases. So, coming out this week, the week of May 3rd, 2013, we have Iron Man 3. So, Marvel's Iron Man 3 pits brash but brilliant industrialist Tony Stark / Iron Man against an enemy whose reach knows no bounds. When Stark finds the personal world distorted in his enemy's hands, he embarks on a harrowing quest to find those responsible. This journey at every turn will test his mettle. With his back against the wall, Stark is left to survive by his own devices, relying on his ingenuity and instincts to protect those closest to him. As he fights his way back, Stark discovers the answer to the question that has secretly haunted him. Does the man make the suit, or does the suit make the man? Really?
What a stupid tagline.
The man makes the suit. Obviously.
He answered that question in The Avengers. Take that armor off. What are you?
A rich billionaire playboy philanthropist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we should have responded with, take away the steroids and what are you? Because think about it. The only reason Captain America is because of steroids. So, moving on to the next movie coming out. It's coming out in limited release. The Iceman. Inspired by actual events, the Iceman follows notorious contract killer Richard Kuklinski from his early days in the mob until his arrest for the murder of more than 100 men. Appearing to be living in the American dream as a devoted husband and father, in reality, Kuklinski was a ruthless killer for hire. When finally arrested in 1986, neither his wife nor daughters have any clue about his real profession. So yeah, it's a biopic about killers.
Yay.
Whoop-de-fucking-do. So we went on another limited release movie coming out this week. What Macy Knew. So, a contemporary reimagining of Henry James's novel What Macy Knew tells the story of a captivating little girl's struggle for grace in the midst of her parents' bitter custody battle. Told through the eyes of the title's heroine, Macy navigates their ever-widening turmoil with a six-year-old's innocence, charm, and generosity of spirit. I am so riveted by this story. Well, to be honest, it actually sounds like it could be kind of interesting. I just did that because, you know, it didn't seem like it wanted the really campy voice or the really serious trailer voice. So I decided to go with this really fucking voice. Sorry, I lost that one for me. Anyway. So that does it for this week. Moving on to next week, the week of May 10th, 2013. We have, first up in wide release, The Great Gatsby. 3D!
Oh.
So, The Great Gatsby follows Fitzgerald-like would-be writer Nick Carraway as he leaves the Midwest and comes to New York City in the spring of 1922, an era of loosening morals, glittering jazz, bootleg kings, and skyrocketing stocks. Chasing his own American dream, Nick lands next door to a mysterious party-going millionaire, Jay Gatsby, and across the bay from his cousin Daisy and her philandering blue-blooded husband, Tom Buchanan. It is thus that Nick is drawn into the captivating world of super rich, their illusions, loves, and deceits. As Nick bears witness within and without of the world he inhabits, he pens a tale of impossible love, incorruptible dreams, and high-octane tragedy, and holds a mirror to our own modern times and struggles. So yeah, I had to read this book.
I don't know what to think about this movie.
I do. It's a cheap cash grab. Actually, it's an expensive cash grab. It's like, hey, let's get all these sucker people and put them in 1920 shit and then make a movie based on this shitty book. To be honest, I can't even remember the fucking book. I had to read it for school once, and I read the whole goddamn thing, but I cannot remember a single fucking thing that happened in it.
Now, I'm going to say one thing for you calling the book shitty is that it's likely because you read it for school.
Yeah, but I'm guessing
sometimes you read amazing things for school, and they just seem terrible because of how you have to read it.
Yeah, but I'm guessing if I had read that book, you know, not in school, I would still fucking hate it. Anyway, moving on to our next movie, Peoples, with Craig Robinson. So I'm just gonna read this. I'm gonna read the next two movies in my fucking bored man voice because I don't really care. So, Fox Fly in the Hamptons and regular guy Wade Walker crashes a preppy people's family reunion to ask for their precious daughter Grace's hand in marriage. Wade might be a fish out of water amongst this picture-perfect East Coast clan, always trying to keep up appearances, but he's not about to let himself think. Instead, a wild week of the fun, dysfunction, and hilarious surprises, Wade is about to discover there's room for all kinds of people in this family, no matter their differences. Writer and first-time director Tina Gordon Kissam, writer of Drumline, joins forces with Tyler Perry to present a laugh-out-loud look at family ties that freak us out, but bind us together with love.
Okay, so writer of Drumline and Tyler Perry, skip this movie.
It's a Tyler Perry movie that Tyler Perry didn't want to put his name over. That should tell you something. So then moving on to our final movie coming out next week, Aftershock, presented to you by Eli Roth. So, what happens to a group of travelers who are in an underground nightclub in Chile when a massive earthquake hits? Hint, nothing good. That's it.
So wait, this is trying to make money off of the Chilean miners?
No. This is trying to make money off a situation that is similar to the Chilean miners, but just different enough to not be offensive.
And to not have to pay royalties to them or their families.
Yeah, and it's Eli Roth, so a fuck ton of blood will be happening. And Selena Gomez is in it. So hopefully she dies. Yeah, just look at the screenshots of it. It's just everyone in the goddamn movie covered in blood. And right now it has an 82% of Rotten Tomatoes. So yeah. That is for new releases. You seen any trailers? I haven't.
Yes, I have one.
Okay.
Thor 2 The Dark World.
Okay, I have heard this trailer going around, like, in some feeds, and I haven't actually watched it. How is it?
Oh, it sets up a good movie. It kind of makes it seem like, Jane might be killed off.
Ooh.
And there's going to be a Thorky team up.
Then Thor will finally be able to fuck Sif. You know he wants to. Why be with a scientist and you can be with a warrior? Sorry, I'm really tired. I didn't sleep last night. So I guess I could do it for this week. Thank you all for joining us. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us at DeathStoreProds. I'm at Deadman_DDProds, and we have at Bovie1 here. You can like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/DeathStoreProds. Subscribe to us on YouTube at YouTube.com/DeathStoreProds for myself and YouTube.com/Bovie1 for Bovie1. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some reviews. Let us know if you want to see more of us, etc. You can subscribe to us on Stitcher. Download the app and check us out on there. And we are on DeviantArt, so head over to desktopprods.deviantart.com, link is in the footer, and check out some cosplay shit. This week on the website, we're going to be having the first commentary track of Platinum Dunes Month coming up this Friday with this podcast. This week we'll be watching Nightmare on Elm Street Remake. Then be sure to join us this Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, allgames.com/chat for anything cast live. We'd love to hear from you guys about what you think about what we're doing with the site and everything. Then we'll have games next Tuesday, anime next Thursday, as well as a new anime club for episodes 3 and 4 of Angel Beats. And then next Friday we'll be having the commentary track for the Amityville Horror, also part of Platinum Dunes Month. But until all that, I'm the Dead Man.
I'm Bobby Long.
We will see you guys next time.